So it's the last week today of our Monster Series. We spent the last 4 weeks talking about these things in our lives that we need to get rid of in our lives because they take energy and excitement away from us, right? They keep us from truly living as Christ has said to live. Now, I want to tell you, I have gotten more feedback about this sermon series than any series we've done yet here at Restoration. I appreciate the gifts of you all saying, hey, this is a struggle I'm having in my life, and I'm grateful that we're dealing with it. From the week that we talked about our past and the demons of our past and how to move past those, to talking about things that take our time away and our energy away, to last week, talking about our anger and our words and the things that come out of our mouth. And we've spent each week talking about sort of external factors that come from our internal selves, right? These things that well up inside of us that are coming out. So the characteristic of vampires, if we watch them in movies, is that they live off of sucking the life out of other people, right? That's how they live and how they get energy. They come out at night often, at the most vulnerable moment for people, and they attack them. So who are the vampires in our lives? Who are the people that do that, that attack us at our most vulnerable moments? Who are the people that draw the life out of us? These are people. They might be coworkers. They might be family members. They might be neighbors. They might be people who you see on baseball fields and soccer fields that come up to you, and when they leave you after spending time with you, you're exhausted. You have no energy because just like the vampire, they have literally sucked the life out of you. They come in those moments and they take away the life that you had when you walked into that conversation. I want you to consider a few possibilities of this morning. First, let's think about the coworker. The coworker who, when you see them walking down the hallway, you duck, you hide. You turn to your computer and pretend like you didn't see them at all, that you didn't experience them, and they come up, and it's maybe not that you don't like them. You might enjoy their company, but when they come and they sit down in your cubicle or sit down in your office or sit down at all, you know that it's going to be an hour before they leave. Right? They're going to tell you everything from what they had for dinner last night to what they're having to dinner tonight to what they wore and how they decided on how to put their clothes on this morning and what and on and on and on. Right? It's not necessarily that you don't enjoy the person, but when they come, you know that you're going to have to stay late that night and you're going to have to do extra work because they've taken time out of your day. So that's one type a vampire that you might experience. And you can translate that into studying in the library for school or whatever. Here's the second type of person. These are the people that maliciously want to hurt you. Right? Often, they're people in your family. They're people that you're close to. They could be neighbors. They could be coworkers. They could be friends. But whenever they come up to you and spend time with you, their goal is to make themselves feel better and you feel worse. Right? When they come into that conversation with you, they are coming in wanting to get life out of you. Maybe they've had a bad day that morning, and if they come to you, they know that they'll feel better about themselves on the other side of that conversation. And these are people that sort of have intentions of hurting you. And there's a third category of folks as well. These are vampires in our lives who have needs. They're not bad people. Maybe they're struggling with some addiction, some emotional need, some physical need. And when you go and you spend time with them, you do it because it's the right thing to do, because you love them, because you care about them. But you know if you're going to go spend time with them, you need about 4 or 5 hours afterwards to take a nap. You need to go somewhere and refill yourself because that vampire, even though it's a good person and they have no intention of hurting you, they completely drain you. They suck all the energy, and even more importantly, they suck the life out of you. Now, can you identify with any of these people today in your life? Right? Some of you are looking at your spouses. That's weird. Can you identify with people that when they come, you say, I need to find something to replenish and to get that back? So one of the answers with all of these people, even if they're family members, even if you love them, even if they're coworkers, is to, whenever they come, completely run away from them. get out of their presence. Say, I'm not going to spend any time with that person anymore. I don't care what their need is. I don't care what their struggle is, but I'm getting away from them. Right? That's one answer. That's called building a wall. Right? It's called building an impenetrable wall that no one can get through. And you're going to put that up and you're going to say, when you come around, you're not allowed in. But there's a challenge with that. And the challenge with that is we call ourselves the church. And as the church, we try to model our lives after this guy named Jesus. And Jesus was not someone who built walls. In fact, Jesus gave these two commandments, and he said, hey, if you don't do anything else, do these two. And the first one was, love God with all of who you are. And the second one was, love your neighbor. Right? So it's really hard for us to be people who claim to be the church and say, we're just going to run away from all of these hard people and reconcile that with Jesus' command to love your neighbor. So then how did Jesus do it? Because Jesus certainly had people that came and sucked the life and the energy out of him. Jesus certainly had people that came for bad intentions, for good intentions, people who had needs, right? How did Jesus do it? I want to look at a few of Jesus' interactions today to see if we can learn anything about setting boundaries with vampires in our lives. I actually think Jesus is a great boundary setter. So we're going to look first at an interaction that Jesus has with the Pharisees. And we looked at one last week, but this one's a little bit different. This interaction Jesus has with the Pharisees comes right on the tails of a conversation where he said, and he told this story or parable, where he said, all people are invited to the table, right? Everyone can come to the feast. So we're going to look at Matthew, which is the first book in the New Testament. We're going to look at chapter 2, verses 15 to 22. So let's look at that. Then the Pharisees went out and they laid plans to trap him in his own words. They sent their disciples to him along with the Herodians. Teacher, they said, we know that you're a man of integrity and that you teach the way of God in accordance with the truth. You aren't swayed by others because you pay no attention to who they are. Tell us then, what is your opinion? Is it right to pay the imperial tax to Caesar or not? But Jesus, knowing their evil intent, said, you hypocrites, why are you trying to trap me? Show me the coin used for paying the tax. They brought him a denarius, and he asked them, whose image is this and whose inscription? Caesar's, they replied. Then he said to them, so give back to Caesar what is Caesar's, and to God what is God's. When they heard this, they were amazed, so they left him and went away. So as I said, this is following right after Jesus stands up and he tells this big story about how all people are welcome. He tells this parable of a big dinner feast and says, let's invite everybody, not just the nobility, not just the important people, not just the chosen people. So the Pharisees are going to struggle with what Jesus has just said. Because as they understand it, they are the chosen people and only certain people are allowed to come to the table. There are purity laws, there are laws of culture, there are laws of circumcision that only certain people are allowed to come. But Jesus has just said all people are welcome. See, he's challenging the very nature of their teaching, the very important thing that they want to say, and he says all people. And he knows something about them. He knows that they are vampires. Because the passage says this at the very beginning, verse 15, then they went out and laid plans to trap him in his words. See, these people fall in that second category, this particular group of Pharisees, of people who were intentionally coming and trying to hurt him, right? They laid plans to trap him in his words because they wanted to get rid of him. They didn't want him any longer in their culture, challenging what they were thinking about. But what does Jesus do? He doesn't build a wall and say, Pharisees, you aren't allowed in. He lets them in. He has a conversation with them. In fact, he even embraces them. Now, he doesn't do it in such a way that you go, oh, Jesus is kind of a pushover, because he names what's going on in the situation. Did you see that in the passage? This is what he says in verse 18. But Jesus, knowing their evil intent, said, "You hypocrites, why are you trying to trap me?" See, Jesus names, if you're going to treat me this way, I want you to know I'm not okay with that. I'm not going to allow you to try to hurt me and trip me up. He says, but I will wrestle with your question. Now, what's interesting is he doesn't really answer the question, does he? He deals with them in such a way that he says, well, that coin is not of God, so give it back to Caesar and give God what is God's. So they have to leave going, we have to figure this out yet again because we haven't gotten this guy. See, they thought saying this, he would say, give it to God and don't give it to Rome. And then he'd be committing treason against Rome and not paying taxes. And Rome would be able to come after him for that. Or they thought he would say, give it to Rome and not to God. And then the Jewish leaders would be able to say, well, he doesn't really follow God. But he doesn't do either one. He simply lets them come in, embraces them in conversation, and says, the way you're treating me is not okay. So friends, we have to come up with some of these boundaries and these strategies ourselves. How do we, as I said in the beginning, love as Jesus calls us to love these people who are vampires in our lives and suck the life out of us? What do we do? It's interesting to me when we look at the life of Jesus, how we realize that Jesus knew that the very first thing he had to do was to spend time with God in order to be able to be in relationship with other people. I am convinced, and you could argue this, but as I read the Gospels, I'm convinced that if Jesus had taken a Myers-Briggs test, he would have been an introvert. And you go, wow, but Jesus was out talking to people all the time. But what did Jesus need to do over and over again? He needed to get away and be with God and recharge. I actually don't think that's an introversion-extroversion thing. I think we all need that. To be with God and to experience God. See, the problem is, we live in a world often where we think we can go out into the day and we can be okay with all the vampires and we have enough strength. But what we're doing in that case is we're allowing them to fill us up instead of God to fill us up. I read this week a blog by a guy named John Shepherd that was just fascinating to me. And he told this story about how he and his wife were going over to dinner at new friend's house. And they really didn't know if either one of them knew how to cook. They didn't know if they would like the food that they were going to eat. And they were actually really nervous about the evening. They were uncomfortable with what was going to happen because it was all new. So he looked at his wife before they went and he said, let's have a snack. Let's eat something because then we won't be dependent upon what they're cooking. Now he got to their house and one of them, and I don't remember which one, the man or the woman, happened to be a fantastic cook. And they had a great dinner. But their evening was not dependent upon the food that they were going to fill them with. Their evening and the conversation that they were going to have was dependent upon them being present with the people they were with. So often we go out into the world hungry. We haven't spent that time allowing God to feed us and spending that time with God, whether it be through prayer, through worship, through just meditation, reading scripture, all those things we talked about last week, we haven't spent that time so that when we go out in the world, the only food that we're expecting to get is from all these people who might even zap it more out of us. So we leave more and more drained because of those relationships. See, we must feed ourselves, as John Shepherd said, before we go. When we're filled with the presence of Christ in our lives, then we're not expecting others to fill us with those things like life and peace and joy that comes from Christ. So I think the second piece of this is it's important for us to know what Jesus' commandment of loving others includes and what it doesn't include. And I think this is really important for some of us to hear this morning. It does not mean that anybody can do anything they want to you. It does not mean that anybody can say anything they want to you. It does not mean that anybody can treat you any way they want. We don't have to blindly love in the midst of being hurt, right? Sometimes the best way for us to love is to be put some separation in that relationship. But I want to talk briefly about boundaries in that for a second here. My wife has freedom in our home, right? Our relationship is that. She has freedom to our bank accounts, freedom to all of our information because of the relationship that we have. My wife has freedom to our bedroom. things other people don't have because of our relationship. Last week, I was hanging out with a friend of mine, a buddy that I've had long before I ever met Susan, right? A buddy that I had from college. And he's a missionary in Cambodia now, and we were spending time together, and we were sitting down and talking, and it was so good to see him, and we were sharing a lot about our lives. My friend Zach does not have a key to our home. He does not have access to our bank accounts and to our information. He does not have access to our bedroom, right? The difference in our relationship allows me to set up boundaries that he doesn't cross. We're great friends. We're very dear friends. But it's the nature of that relationship. We, too, have to set those boundaries in relationships in our lives with people who suck the life out of us. Jesus does the exact same thing. Jesus sets boundaries. Again, it's not a wall of you can never come in, but it's I'm going to control the entrance and the exit. Think of it more of, as a fence with a gate than a wall that he doesn't let them in. Jesus has this interaction where he goes back to Nazareth, right? He's returning to his place, and he's teaching. And the people are not very excited about this, the people that he comes home to. We're going to look at Luke chapter 4, just a few verses here. They got very angry at him. Let's look at this. All the people in the synagogue were furious when he said he was the Son of God and he was teaching when they heard this. They got up, they drove him out of town and took him to the brow of the hill on which the town was built in order to throw him off the cliff. But he walked right through the crowd and he went on his way. See, the crowd wanted to take Jesus and say, we're angry at you, we don't like you, so we're going to take you and throw you off a cliff. We're going to end your ministry. This was very early on when Jesus was doing what he was doing. But Jesus looked at them and said, this is not okay. It's not okay for you to treat me this way. And instead of staying in the midst of them, what does Jesus do? He turns around and he walks right out. He says, I need you to know that the way that you're treating me and an example of the way that you should treat the world, this is not okay. Here's the third thing. You can limit your time and say no to people who drain your energy. I'm not saying no forever, but you can say no to people who drain your energy. I encourage you to increase your time and say yes to people who give you energy. Increase your time and spend time with those people who give you that energy. That coworker who you enjoy, but who when they come, they zap all the energy out of you and cause you to have to work 2 hours later. What if instead you said to them as they came up to your desk, hey, are you free for lunch today? How about we sit down over lunch and we talk then? I've got a little bit more work to do. Or that person and that old friend who you constantly say, I can't spend time with you because I'm really busy with all these other things. What if instead of that on a Saturday morning you said, I'm going to go spend time with that friend? Because when I do, they give me life and they give me energy. Friends, that's exactly what Jesus does. Jesus goes away and he spends time and energy with friends. There's one more passage in here. We'll go back to Matthew chapter 14, verses 22. It's earlier on, Luke, in the thing. Immediately, Jesus made the disciples get into the boat and go on ahead of him to the other side. While he dismissed the crowd, after he had dismissed them, he went up on a mountainside by himself to pray. Later that night, he was there alone, and the boat was already a considerable distance from land, buffeted by the waves because the wind was against it. Jesus loved the disciples. He loved all of the people, but he needed to say yes to his Father. He needed to say yes to spending time with God. He went back with him and said, I just need a little more energy. Friends, we're all allowed to do that. We're all allowed to say, I need to say no a little more often and yes a little more often to the things that don't give me life, no, and to the things that do give me life, yes. But I could go through this whole thing and forget a big piece of this, which I did when I first wrote this. And that piece is that I, too, can be a vampire. Each of us can be our very own vampires to other people and not even realize it. And I think it takes us getting to that point of realizing that we can be vampires, that we actually have a little bit more patience and a little bit more time with those people who are. I had an experience when I first got out of college. I was helping out with a group of middle school students at a church, and I knew everything. No, seriously, I knew everything, right? I was helping out these middle school kids. I'd never done it before, but I looked at our program and I said, I know all of these things that we can make greater. I would call the young woman who was running the program at the time. I'd call her about once a week, and I'd say, hey, I've got all these great ideas for how we can make this better, greater ways that we can reach these kids, greater things that we can do to make them experience God. And she was very kind with me. Each time she would listen and she would hear all of these things until finally one time she said, hey, can we meet sometime? And I said, yeah, that'd be great, thinking she wants to hear more of my ideas, of course. And we sat down and she said, Tim, I love your ideas. I love your energy. And actually, we implement a lot of them. But she said, I just need you to know that every time you call, it takes me off of what I'm doing and sends me down a rabbit trail for a couple of days. Because when you call, you're giving me all these exciting things, and I forget where we were going and what the mission was, and I get excited about these new things. She said, what if we set up a time to meet once a month where we brainstorm together about what we could do? See, she was setting this beautiful boundary with me that I didn't even understand at the time. I was acting unintentionally as a vampire to her. I was sucking the energy out of her and sucking the time out of her without even realizing it. See, we too can be those people. And I think when we get to a point in our lives, and we've kind of dealt with this in the whole Monster series, where all we do is we push out on other people, and you're making me do this, and you're the person, we forget what God is trying to do in us. With this vampire thing, friends, God is trying, I believe, to tell me, love others. In the midst of loving others, set those boundaries and realizing that you're that other person sometimes too. You cause that pain. So what do I want us to do this morning? What do I encourage us to do? I want to encourage us to think about one vampire in our lives. One person in our lives. I mean, we could sit here this morning and think about all the vampires, but you might become depressed at the end, right? One vampire in your life who sucks the energy out of you. Just one. I want you to think this morning about a way that you're going to start to set some boundaries in your life with just that one person. Because vampires, if we look at them in the movie, often live in big castles, right? And if you think this week, maybe even this afternoon, you're going to march up to every big castle and deal with every big vampire who lives in there, I think you'll be discouraged very quickly. But if we address them one at a time, again, not building a wall, but building a fence where we control the entrance and the exit. If we will address those one person at a time, I believe that God can do something incredibly powerful in our lives in those relationships. So as we do come, as we receive communion this morning, I want to encourage us maybe to spend a brief moment before we get up and pray. God, who might be that person in my life or that situation in my life that I need to start dealing with? God, I've been working on me for the past month and working on me throughout this whole time, and now I need to start setting those boundaries in my relationship. God, thank you for the example of Christ. Thank you for the ways that Christ walked through life with people and didn't push people out completely, but instead learned how, taught us how to walk through relationship with them. I believe that God can do something incredibly powerful this very morning. Remember, the greatest thing that we're called to do is to love. So I want to ask you, how are you going to love others this week? How are you going to love yourself in the midst of loving them? Amen.